Ah, the opening music for the movie Airplane. Oh, man. It's hard to believe that this comedy classic was released over 40 years ago. And our guests today are the creators of that hilarious movie and many others. Police Squad, Ruthless People, The Naked Gun, among others. Larry Mueller, thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. With us today, David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker. They are the guys who took a somewhat twisted path from where they grew up in Shorewood, Wisconsin, to founding a small theater at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It was known as the Kentucky Fried Theater. They went on to L.A., made a movie called the Kentucky Fried Movie, and then their breakout hit, Airplane. So, as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Are you a fan of Airplane? What's your favorite line, maybe? What questions do you have about the movie, how it was made? Want to have you part of the conversation. So join in at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Oh, David Zucker, welcome.
Yes, nice to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah. Jerry Zucker, welcome to you.
Hello, Larry. Welcome to you.
And Jim Abrams, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you. I like your hat.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wear this cap all the time. It's a Wisconsin Public Radio cap, and I'm rarely without it, mostly because I'm follicle challenged a bit, and it can be a problem. I want to tell you.
Do we each get one? Do we each get one?
Well,
for being guests on your show?
If you contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall member drive,
got it.
We'll be glad to.
There you go.
Send you one. I got to tell you, about 6 months after your movie Airplane came out, I was on a plane. I'd done some work in Trinidad. And I got on a plane, and I'm seated next to this guy, and we get talking. And he asked me, you know, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm a professor at the University of Wisconsin. And he says, Wisconsin? Airplane! he said, the guys that directed Airplane are from Wisconsin. And he's laughing already, and he says, do you know these guys? And I said, surely you can't be serious.
No.
And it was like a split second. And then he goes, oh, and then we spent the next 20 minutes or so talking about the movie and laughing the whole way. And I think the people across from us thought we were nuts because we were replaying as many of the parts as we could think of.
Did he ask you how you take your coffee?
No, but we did get into, let's see, there was one, do you like Gladiator movies?
Oh, so he was into pedophilia.
Oh, man. Well, here it is, 40 years more. Why? And you've got this wonderful book. Why release it now first?
Well, we were trying to hit the 40-year anniversary, but we 3 years over time.
We released it now because we finished it.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons.
And we decided not to wait, you know, another few years before we released it.
And I think a lot of it had to do, too, with over the years, we've been sort of stunned by how long the movie has stayed popular and well-known and quoted and all that. So we thought maybe someday our kids or our grandkids or something would be interested in knowing what happened back then. So we decided to preserve it in a book.
And Jim's discovered all these YouTube videos where it shows people, young people, you know, in their early 20s and late teens, seeing Airplane for the first time. And so that's kind of surprised that it's still, the movie still entertains people who haven't seen it before.
Yeah.
Even though, for instance, when before he gets on the plane, she's the woman at the desk said, smoking or non-smoking about the ticket. And, you know, it's been decades since anyone was allowed to smoke on an airplane. But that joke with the smoking ticket holds up as well today as it did, you know, in 1980.
Yeah, and it comes back at least one more time. I mean, he opens the ticket and it's smoking, and then later he goes to the ticket and is still smoking.
Right.
It was amazing. Jeff in Madison, we ought to get him in because he's got a story about playing Airplane.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Great, thanks.
Awesome. Hey, well, let me just tell you a little, Annie. I don't know what Robert Hayes was like, but I'll tell you something. I was managing a movie theater, and this is back when theaters only got one, that movie. There was none others in town. And Robert Hayes came to Dubuque, Iowa after your movie to film a job called Take This Job and Shove It. So I was ripping tickets for people to get in the movie, and I ripped a ticket, and I looked up, and I went, hey, wait a minute, you're in this movie. And he goes, yeah, I'm Robert Hayes. And I said, you're coming to see your own movie? And so he just laughs and he says, yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Wow. You know, when Airplane was released, we would go with Bob to, you know, to movie theaters around L.A. here and watch it. And it was fun to sit in the back. And then, you know, people would come up to us. Well, people would come up to Bob Hayes. They ignored us. Yeah.
Oh, so this book, I mean, what a revelation. And it's the three of you kind of talking about the book, but then there are, it felt like hundreds of side comments from actors from the movie, people who weren't in the movie, like David Letterman, comments about the film. And I'm just amazed that you were able to put all that together.
Well, Letterman was almost in the movie.
Yeah.
He actually did a screen test, and we talk about that in the book. And but he was uncomfortable with acting, and Jerry finally called him to tell him he didn't get the part. And Letterman says in the book he was so relieved. He loved the movie, and he loved it even more because he wasn't in it.
Well, how did you do it? I mean, how did you organize all this? It had to take forever.
Yeah, didn't you read the book?
I did read the book.
It's all in there, Larry.
Aaron's trying to help us by getting the story out of you.
It was over a long period of time.
Right.
And I mean, really, in a sense, we were pretty lucky. I mean, we were incredibly lucky. But I mean, looking back at it now, it actually didn't take that long to be, you know, we were here. It was like 6 years we were here and we were making a movie, or maybe even less, actually. And then a couple of years later, Airplane. I'm talking about Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah.
It's our first. So, but for us, it felt like ages, but because we did a first draft of Airplane and nobody was interested. So we did Kentucky Fried Movie and then we came back to it and nobody, you know, we took another year and still nobody wanted it. And we just kept writing and kept trying to find people. And finally we ended up at Paramount, but it was, you know, but really it all started at the University of Wisconsin when we did Kentucky Fried Theater there. And that was our first audiences. And that's where we really learned, you know, what was funny and how to make people laugh.
And, you know, let's go back to that a little bit, because you were here at Kentucky Fried Theater was really funny. And you took, why'd you take it to talk about why you took it to L.A.?
Well, we found by 1972, you know, film production had pretty much dried up in southeastern Wisconsin. So we wanted to get into movies. So we decided we either go to New York or L.A. And one of the guys in our troop, one of our partners, Dick Chudnow, who now does comedy sports, he said, I'm going to L.A. So Dick was the star of the show, and we figured it would be more comfortable to starve in L.A. than in New York.
And ultimately, our goal was to wind up on The Tonight Show. And The Tonight Show is filming in L.A., so let's go to L.A.
And you wound up on The Tonight Show at some point.
Yes, we did.
We were.
Yeah, we wound up on The Tonight Show, and we bombed. It was kind of interesting. Johnny Carson had the night off the night we made it on, and so this guy Joey Bishop was the guest host, and his introduction to us was something like, "Geez, I haven't met these guys. I hear they're pretty funny. I know they're from Wisconsin, and I'm sure they're scared to death. Please welcome Kentucky Fried Theater." And it kind of went downhill from there.
Oh man, what an introduction! Jim from Green Bay wonders about. He thought you came from Whitefish Bay instead of Shorewood, but he's wondering how did your high school experience affect your future?
Well, there were a lot of funny guys in our high school class. We weren't the funniest ones. They were just all able to find jobs after high school. But, there was something in the water, probably in Wisconsin. And we thought, particularly in Shorewood, mainly because I think we knew we weren't hot stuff.
You were. And it's a kind of a self-deprecating humor.
Jerry froze. What he meant
as opposed to LA and California, you know, which have a certain kind of arrogance, I think, about that. I think our humor was very Wisconsin.
We tell a story in the book about we went to Shorewood High School, and the third floor of Shorewood High School was this big dome, and there was a classroom under the dome, and the acoustics were very bad. So they hung a huge American flag on the ceiling in the Copper Dome, it was called, so that the acoustics would be okay to teach classes. And one day there was a substitute teacher who came in, and she said, you know, like, how do you start the class? And one of the guys, not us, but one of the guys in the class said, well, we start by saying the Pledge of Allegiance. So we all have to lie down on the floor and face the flag in order to say the pledge. And so everybody in the class, just sort of spontaneously, including the substitute teacher, laid down on the floor and said the pledge.
David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker will be with us till 12:30. We're talking about their book, Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane. And you'll be able to join in. Chris and Oshkosh, I hope you can stay with us. He's online. We'll get to you. And you as well. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll be back right after this look at the news.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Leslie Nielsen, one of the actors in the movie Airplane. And we are talking with the directors, the writers and directors, David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker, who wrote and directed this groundbreaking comedy, Airplane, and are talking about their new book, Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane. And I'll invite you to join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Chris and Oshkosh. Chris, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, Larry. It's good to talk to you again. I got to all of you creators that gave the airline industry the greatest gift since Charles Lindbergh, perhaps. I am recently retired from a 35-year airline career, and I suspect you've probably heard all this before, but do you have any clue what a fundamental part of the aviation industry you have become? your movie is, you can't get through a week flying the line without hearing at least three lines from your movie.
Wow.
One of my best friends from high school, Glenn Crow, flew for, I think, American Airlines for 25 years. And he also quoted the book, and he tells how all the pilots and the air controllers, sometimes I guess the air controllers would say, you're coming in a little hot, Striker. You know, they would just say these lines from airplane. And he said for every year he flew, they were talking about it.
And they loved it. I mean, as Chris said, the people in the airline, and I don't know if you were ever worried about that, probably not, but.
Ever worried about what?
About the whether or not airline folks were going to like the movie.
I think we kind of assumed that they would. Because they have as much of a sense of humor as anyone else, and it's their you know, that's what they do.
When we filmed the stuff in the airport at TWA, that was the terminal at LAX where we filmed, and so right before the movie opened, we did a special screening for the employees of TWA, and they like went through the roof. They just laughed and laughed and laughed. They love it.
And Kareem tells the story of how after Airplane came out, he was flying to New York or something, and the pilots had him up to the, and you could do that, had him up to the flight deck at the time, and had their pictures taken with him, and just to, and actually took off with Kareem in the cockpit just to say they flew with Murdoch.
Well. It was, and all those actors, and I shouldn't say all of them, but many of them did not want to be in the movie. Bob Stack, Robert Stack, did not think it was going to work.
Yeah, Robert Stack was a little concerned about the script, and probably more about that we were first-time directors, and there were three of us. Peter Graves actually threw the script across the room and said, this is the worst piece of trash he's ever read. But fortunately, our executive producer, Howard Koch, convinced him to come in and meet with us. And then I think it really was his wife and his daughter who said, Dad, this, you should do this. This is a funny script. So he took a chance.
And I think after the movie, Robert Stack came to you and thanked you profusely, as I think I remember reading in the book.
Well, actually, very happy that it worked, because I don't think anybody really understood until they saw it. Even the studio, the first day of dailies, they called, and the first day was Don't Call Me Shirley, and that line in the cockpit was a shot of the first day. So when they saw it, we got these calls, and they said, oh, now we get it. Because it was a really, we don't think anybody was stupid for not understanding that. It was a really difficult concept to get, and it was very much in our minds. So the actors, I think, had kind of the same reaction in seeing the movie and seeing everybody laugh. They kind of say, oh, this is what they're doing. I guess it does work.
And when you think about it, that's sort of a fringe benefit of that casting, because all those guys had spent their whole careers playing these ostensibly very serious roles. And for them to have a laugh at their own expense is really kind of endearing. And I think that's sort of another level of why Airplane works and how therapeutic and healthy it is to have a laugh at your own expense.
Yeah. And I think to that same point, Kareem's image up to that point was very serious and, you know, dour and humorless. And he completely turned that around by appearing in the movie. And then people thought, well, the guy's okay. He's funny. Kareem says ever since then, he's always been happy that he did it.
Yeah. Actually, his lines from the movie were ostensibly written by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because we were in Milwaukee when he started his career. And those were the arguments that the Journal Sentinel would make against Kareem. You know, he doesn't work hard enough on defense, doesn't try as hard except during the playoffs. So we just sort of quoted those lines back to him, and he got to answer them in the movie.
There were very few original lines in the movie that we actually wrote.
And I think the lawyer, you saw the movie Zero Hour, and it wasn't even, I don't know, remember the reason you saw it. And that's where your inspiration came from, the movie Zero Hour.
We used to leave our videotape recorder on overnight, and just not to get movies, but to get commercials so we could spoof them in our Kentucky Fried Theater show. And then one morning, this movie's Zero Hour played, you know, very serious. And we thought, well, maybe we could redub this because it's so unintentionally funny anyways. And then we thought, why don't we just recast it and do it that way? And that's really how the whole idea came about.
It's amazing. David, Daryl in Menominee Falls has something. Let's go there. Hi, Daryl.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I really love the movies. And to see George Kennedy in a comedy role like that was so different, because I've always seen him in serious movies. And then to cast him with a perfect straight man like Leslie Nielsen was just genius. And it was funny to watch that show. It's just, that movie is so hilarious.
Thank you.
Great job.
Yeah, that'll be in our next one, which is about all the other movies.
I have a question. Is Ernie Van Schlateren still in Menominee Falls?
Darren.
No. Darren. Do you want me to sing the jingle? Ernie yeah. Van Schlateren, Main Street
Main
in Menominee
Falls. Menominee Falls.
Yeah, there you
the
go.
Tune at the end. You have to have that on there. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Daryl,
you're not sponsored by dealership.
Thanks for calling, Daryl. Jonah and Fond du Lac, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jonah.
Hi there.
And what's on your mind?
I was just calling in to say that when I saw this movie in like senior year of high school, finally, I'm only 24, so it really wasn't that long ago. It was the first time I can remember having to pause the movie to get my laughing out, because I was like choking on my own laughs, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see through my eyes because there were tears. And this was just in the airport. Like, so many little things were just happening inexplicably, and then they move on. Like the people coming down on the baggage claim. I think that's what did me in. That's where I paused. I was like, whoa. So yeah, I had a very formative, you know, it was very formative for me.
Jonah, thanks. Yes. Thanks a lot. And you guys, you know, after you had the sort of the film together, you showed it a lot and you cut a bit, but sometimes would leave a little bit of pause so that people wouldn't miss the next joke because they'd be laughing.
Yeah, like after Kareem balls out the kid, and he, you know, he kind of shoves him away a little bit, and the kid is just looking. We just hold on that for about 3 or 4 seconds, and that's because the laugh in the theater would last that long.
And the same thing with when the girl says, "I take my coffee black like my men," then we hold on the reaction
the
of
kid.
The boy reacting yeah. forever.
Right, yeah.
Because people were laughing so hard.
And there's a one point you said you went, according to one guy, there was one time you showed it, and you showed it to a group of executives, I think, who...
The first screening was a disaster, and it was all the executives and then some people they grabbed off the streets or whatever, and they just didn't know what they were seeing, and it was terrible because it was the first screening, and it was just practically silent except for one guy who was just really got it and cackling and laughing through the whole thing. And we always record, the movies so we can hear the reaction for the ending. And so we literally took that recording and edited the movie to this one guy who laughed.
Yeah. And of course, we never found out his name. Never were able to thank him.
Yeah. Oh, Tom in Buffalo County has a question. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hello. You answered some of my questions while I was waiting on hold. One of them was, how did you think of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to be in the script, and how did you get him? And the second thing was, how much did the movie cost, and where'd you get the money?
Yeah. Okay. All good questions.
Kareem wasn't even our first choice. We first went to Pete Rose, but that summer he was playing baseball. So we went to Kareem, and it was really fortunate that we did because there was much more material to write for Kareem.
And the movie cost $3 million, and it was financed entirely by Paramount.
And the original offer to Kareem was $30,000 to make the movie, and his agent got back to us and said, well, he wants $35,000 because there's this Oriental rug that he wants to buy. And we thought, yeah, that's agents being agents. So they paid him the $35,000. But sure enough, a couple of weeks later, there was an article in Time magazine with Kareem posing with his new Oriental rug that he bought for $35,000.
Oh, man. That's a great story. Bob Stack, you've got a quote from him. You were really trying to get him, and Stack says, at one point they offered me a small percentage of the profits or whatever, and he turned that down. He said that was the biggest mistake he likely ever made.
Well, that's a true story. He did and always joked about it later.
Man. Tom, thanks. And the movie wound up grossing what, $200 million or something? Is some?
It did about 160. They did about 80 in the U.S. and 80 outside, in foreign territories.
And that's 40 years. That's 40 year old money.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And today
that would equate to $3 billion today.
About $3 billion. Julie in Madison, hi. Thanks for calling.
Say, can you please tell the population your start at the Kentucky Fried Theater at the La Daisy Cafe?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Dick Chudnow, our partner at the time, found this place, a room above the Daisy Cafe, which was on Washington Boulevard. And so we spent a couple of weeks hammering and nailing, a stage together, and we rented chairs and we put a control room together. And then 3 days before we were going to open the show, the building inspector closed us down because the owner of the Daisy Cafe had neglected to take out a building permit to have a theater there. So but fortunately, the Union South came to the rescue and let us have a room there. So we our first show was at the Union South, and that was a disaster. So, yeah.
Well, we'd never rehearsed. We were spending so much time building and stuff, so we never rehearsed. And we did the show at the Union South, and not only were there technical difficulties, but we ran out of material, and we charged $1 to get in. Not only did we run out of material, when we were 20 minutes into it. And so there's nothing left to do. But fortunately, Dick Chudnow, who was our partner back then, was very comfortable up on stage. And he, excuse me, got up on stage and did a bunch of improv.
Tom and McQuadigo, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to say it's a great movie, and I don't think a week goes by without me quoting something from it. But I was fortunate enough a few years ago to work with Leslie Nielsen on some gratis stuff, and he was constantly quoting out of the movie, and was one of the funniest guys I've ever met. And I was just wondering what you guys thought. How was he to work with?
He was great. He was a great guy. We loved Leslie, and you know, obviously, you used him a lot afterwards. Worked with him a lot afterwards. But he actually was the one of those four guys who really got it. He was a fish in water with comedy, you know, and we kind of taught him how to pretend that he didn't know he was in a comedy, which we always would tell everyone to act as if you had no idea what we were doing. And he was kind of a fellow anarchist. He really liked poking fun at the big guys.
Yeah. He was, and he probably, as an actor, maybe he benefited the most from the movie, do you think?
Well, I think it definitely in the sense that he always wanted to do comedy. He loved comedy, and he was kind of stuck in this straight man's body, you know, and doing all these serious roles. We did hundreds of episodic television roles and big movies and everything, but I think he never really became a star quite, you know, and until he started doing comedy. So I think you're correct, he benefited the most.
Yeah. Lloyd Bridges also, and you got to be really good friends with him even after the movie was over.
With Jim, yes. Worked with him on two other movies.
Yeah, I worked with him a couple other times, and we did get to be friends. And he was a great guy. Actually, one time I called him up, and we had a new script where kind of a mafia spoof. And I called him up and said, "Hi, Lloyd." And this is after we worked together a bunch of times, and we were friends, like our families were friends and stuff. I said, "Hi, Lloyd, how you doing?" And he said, "Fine." Kind of skeptical. And he said, "I said, well, we got a new script. We got a great part for you." And so he said, "Yeah," like very suspicious. And I went on and kept pitching for a while. And he said, "Wait a minute, who is this?" And I said, "Well, it's Jim Abrams." And he said, "Oh, I thought you said you were Jim Neighbors."
He was willing to do a Jim Abrams movie, but not a Jim Neighbors movie.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Do you have a favorite scene for the movie?
You know, I always liked it when the stewardess says, I'm scared. I've never been so scared. I'm 20, but, and besides, I'm 26 and I'm not married. And that's a laugh. But then the other lady comes in and Leslie asks her how she's doing. She said, "I'm scared. I've never been so scared, but at least I have a husband." So, you know, something about that. It's a very simple joke. It worked 43 years ago. It works today. And I think it would work 43 years in the future.
Well, I think you're right about that. I after I finished your book, I watched the movie again. And it was so much fun for me. Another one I really laughed a lot about was when Leslie Nielsen is describing what happens to people when they, you know, who eat this fish. And Peter Grave is going through all of the motions as Leslie Nielsen describes.
They're not paying any attention to him. So,
and that, by the way, that shot is a complete duplicate of the way they shot that scene in Zero Hour. I mean, the camera in front of the pilot and the doctor and the stewardess behind, but we just reeled off a few more symptoms of the food poisoning.
Oh, man. Well, I hope you sell a lot of copies of this book. It has been a joy talking with the three of you. And I would love to have the chance to do it again or even to talk more with you. Thank you so much for being
here. Sure.
We'll
be back tomorrow.
All right. I'll see about sending you a cap or maybe three. All right. Thanks. Right. Thanks a lot. David.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker, our guests today. The movie Airplane and the book, get a copy. It's really, really funny and very interesting about the making of this movie. The book title, Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane. And thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Miller.